Ready to level up? Chumba Casino is your playbook to fun. It's free to play with no purchase necessary. Enjoy hundreds of online social games like blackjack, slots, and solitaire anytime, anywhere with fresh releases every week. Whether you're at home or on the go, let Chumba Casino bring the excitement to you. Plus, get free daily login bonuses and a free welcome bonus. Join now for your chance to redeem some serious prizes. Play Chumba Casino today. No purchase necessary. VGW Group. Void where prohibited by law. 21 plus. T&Cs apply.
KYW News Radio Original Podcasts. From KYW News Radio 103.9 FM, this is Bridging Philly, connecting our communities on the issues that matter to you. Presented by Gift of Life Donor Program. Register as an organ donor at donorsone.org.
Hello, I'm Raquel Williams. Welcome to Bridging Philly. As we close out Women's History Month, we often hear about the founding fathers, but what about the women who are part of shaping the nation? The National Society of the Colonial Dames in the Commonwealth of Pennsylvania has released a multi-part docuseries that tells the story of women who helped shape our nation. I sit with the executive producer and a documentarian to learn more.
Right now, in this moment, this is when we need to hear these stories.
And Sharad A. Howard checks out Benjamin Franklin's library.
We have 3.5 miles of archival material, a huge collection.
All that important history is coming up on Bridging Philly. The National Society of the Colonial Dames in the Commonwealth of Pennsylvania, in association with You'll Never Forget Productions, have officially launched For the Common Good, the women who shaped our nation. It is a multi-part docuseries that tells the story of 9 pioneering Pennsylvania women who made important contributions to the founding of America. As Women's History Month comes to a close, we wanted to learn more about these women. And here to tell us more is Mickey Herr, executive producer of the docuseries. She's also first vice president for the board of PA Dames. And joining Mickey is Nathaniel Popkin, the project's producer, writer, and documentarian. Welcome to you both to Bridging Philly.
Thank you.
Thanks for having us.
Sure. So, of course, first question. What inspired the National Society of the Colonial Dames in Pennsylvania, or PA Dames? I forgot to say Commonwealth. I know it's a long name.
It's a long name.
What inspired PA Dames to create For the Common Good?
So, you know, everybody around town and across the country is trying to figure out how to celebrate America 250. And we are a 135-year-old women's organization founded in 1891 here in Philadelphia. And we realized we weren't doing a good job of celebrating our female ancestors. To become a dame, you have to be a direct descendant of a particular ancestor who qualifies for our list. And it used to be sort of men who signed documents or men who worked there. Mm-hmm. They held office. And so we started looking at the ways women contributed to our colony, to the success of our colony. And that's how this project started.
Okay. So what's the goal of PA Dames? Is it to preserve the history and to get that education out?
Yeah. So our mission is really, our name is long. Our mission is super simple. We believe in preservation. We believe in education and service. And one of the big projects we work on here in Philadelphia is Stenton, which is the house that was the home of James Logan, who was the provincial secretary of William Penn. And that is out just beyond Germantown in the Logan section of Philadelphia. Mm-hmm. And it's probably the most authentic historic house in Philadelphia.
Nathaniel, how did you become involved with PA Dames to get this project off the ground?
Well, Mickey and I have been friends for a long time, and we started talking one day about potential projects. And I have been making history-based documentaries for quite a long time, a lot of deep reflection on Philadelphia's history particularly. And Mickey and I started talking along with our director, Andrew Ferret. Started talking about this idea of including women in their list of ancestors, and we began to think about a documentary that would sort of follow the researchers into the archives to come up with women from the 17th and 18th century who would qualify as ancestors and who we should be celebrating as hidden formative Americans. Mm-hmm. And that evolved into, okay, who are these women? Can we make films about them? what would that end up looking like? And we fell upon a multi-series approach that would look at one at a time. Mm-hmm. So we've made nine. We've made nine episodes of this series about nine women from the 17th and 18th centuries.
Okay. I'm curious to know about the selection process. I mean, I'm sure there are plenty of women that played a role in shaping this country. What made these nine women stand out?
So we've been doing this research for 3-4 years now, and we have officially added 75 women to our register of ancestors.
Okay.
We found women doing all kinds of amazing things. There were ministers, there were, you know, historic founders, a chocolate maker, someone owned a wharf, you know, like so many jobs that you can't even imagine that women did. And so I think what I say is women didn't sign documents, generally speaking, and women didn't go to battle, but they did everything else that mattered.
Right, right.
Yet among our list of nine is the first female public official in the United States. She was the treasurer of Lancaster County in the period right after the Revolution, when the country was just being born.
Mm-hmm.
So she did sign documents. And one of the coolest things that we found in the archives was a letter sent to her from the treasurer of Pennsylvania to her. And it was a form letter that was sent to all of the county treasurers saying, go collect the debt. The most amazing thing, it said in typescript, "Dear Sir." And the person who wrote that letter crossed out the "Sir" and wrote in "Dear Madam." And that right there is narrative. That's a story that felt so profound to me when I found it in the Historical Society of Pennsylvania's archives.
Yeah.
It was just an extraordinary thing to find.
And the other woman that was a first is the first colonist in all of America to get a patent from King George was a woman.
Wow.
And her name was Sybilla Wrighton Masters. And of course, because of English law, it's called coverture law, it was held under her husband's name. But he made no bones about the fact that this was her invention. Mm-hmm. And she ended up actually having the first and the third official patent in the royal colony, in the colonies. She actually had to travel in 1715 from Philadelphia back to London and spent time to do all of the things, all of the paperwork, all of the things she had to do to get the patent from the king.
That's interesting. You know, I'd love to sit here and uncover all of the stories of all nine women, but I know we can't give it all away. But I do want to get into the research because I do find that fascinating. And I'm wondering, perhaps Nathaniel, you can talk a little bit about some stories and sources that kind of helped you uncover the gems that you uncovered during the research.
Well, I have to say we started off with Mickey's research because she developed dossiers on each one of these women,
okay,
basically all 65 that we had received at the time, which was an amazing thing. But we wanted to do something very special with this project, sort of breaking through the wall here by bringing the camera into the archives. Philadelphia, we have probably the greatest collection of archival libraries of any city in the country. At the Historical Society of Pennsylvania, you have, you know, practically as many documents as is in the Library of Congress. So we brought the camera into the Historical Society, the College of Physicians, where we filmed the actual recipe book. It's called a recipe book, but there was a woman. Her name was Elizabeth Coates Pascal, and she was a medical healer. She made her medical treatments through herbs, you know, natural medicine, but unlike almost everyone in her time, she did scientific research and she wrote it all down. And her book exists in Philadelphia today, and we filmed it. The first protest against enslavement in North America was in 1688 by a group of people in Germantown. That document, which they wrote on that day, April 18th, 1688, is held at Haverford's Quaker Collection Library in Haverford College. And we brought the camera in there and we filmed it. And we filmed researchers doing the act of finding stuff in these places as well. And that's just the tip of the iceberg.
Mm-hmm. One of the really important things about this process is that finding women in the record is very different than finding men.
How so?
So here's a one of the best examples I can give you is when people came over on a ship, men were listed. Generally speaking, women weren't. So we've always honored founders like these men who arrived on whatever ship it was.
Right.
But chances are there was his wife sitting next to him, but she was not documented. And so for some people, that lack of documentation meant that she didn't exist. But what you have to do for the woman is you go back to the home country and you find her birth certificate or you find her marriage license. And then you come to America and you find a record of her child's birth. And you put two and two together because there's only so many ships at the time. And then there's this other thing called coverture law, which I mentioned, where women did not have a legal identity. Their legal identity was under their husband. So they didn't have wills. They didn't have the same records. So you have to go about it in a little different way. And once you figure out that there is this other way, it's amazing what comes up.
Okay. Yeah, I can see the challenge that exists there. And I'm wondering, were you able to contact descendants, families? Did family members play a role at all in uncovering this and maybe furthering telling the stories that you brought forth?
We did. And one of the interesting ways to find women, there was a man that I gave an example of. His name is Benjamin Shoemaker. It's a big family here in town. And you looked at his family tree. And Elizabeth Coates Paschal was the sister of his first wife. And then to the right is her sister-in-law. And then his aunts and his mother were founders of Germantown. So like you take this one person and you look all these different places. And his sister-in-law, through his brother, was actually a woman named Dorothy Shoemaker. And she was a person who carried on the family business after her husband died. And she started a mill, built her own mill. And I learned about her because of one of her descendants who contacted me and said, I have this ancestor. So it's really all these different entry points to find these people. It just takes a while.
While you're conducting all of this research, and I want to hear from both of you, what are some of the more surprising things that you were able to find to uncover? Because just sitting here in a couple of minutes, just hearing what you've already, you know, what you've discovered is just fascinating. I'm wondering what stood out during the research that really popped and you could like, wow, this is mind blowing.
Well, I think there's a couple good examples of ways in which we've been able to use this project to sort of drive holes through or open up new areas of investigation. The story of the first protest against slavery is a great example. Mm-hmm. It's always been imagined to be a bunch of men come together in someone's house and write this thing. We use a female figure, Ellen Kunders, who, by the way, was pregnant on the ship when she was coming over to America. How do we begin to see this whole event very differently through the eyes of this woman? And by using genealogical research, by understanding the context of what she was doing, what a woman would be doing in that moment, which was building the business of the community, which was making linen, we begin to see what motivated them to write their protest. And we begin to see the way a community can act together with a single voice through a woman. And that is a transformative thing. This is not your standard history we're telling here.
Right.
I would say my big surprise is once we started to uncover women, and Nathaniel mentioned community, it is this deep web. And these women are all interconnected, sisters or sister-in-laws or aunts and all of these different configurations. I think my takeaway from a female perspective, a woman's perspective, is I was mad. I was mad that I grew up without any of these stories.
I get it. Yeah.
We focus on the founding fathers. There is something deeper going on that we have grown up without, and I'm angry about it.
Yeah. And, you know, but you're angry and you're doing something about it, though.
Yes, yes. So, yeah. I have this outlet.
There's a lot of history that's been told wrong. There's a mythic story of a woman who was accused of being a witch in the 1680s, Margaret Matson. She was Finnish. And that story is told to demonstrate the ways in which William Penn, the founder of Pennsylvania, was actually kind and egalitarian and tolerant of things, and by not convicting her of witchcraft, letting her go. Mm-hmm. Whereas in Massachusetts, they were burning witches at the stake. But as we begin to center that story around that woman, Margaret Matson, who was accused of witchcraft, we began to see a very different story, which was an attempt in the accusation of her of being a witch to take her land by the powerful people surrounding William Penn himself. So we began to see power as it gets played out in a gendered context. Yeah. And we began to see also the ways in which we believe the Quaker founders of Pennsylvania were just people. They were tolerant people. We begin to see the ways in which they too were after power and control. And this entirely changes the way we might think about that early period of history.
Bridging Philly continues in a moment. Back to Bridging Philly, connecting our communities on the issues that matter to you.
Talk about your approach to bringing all of this research to the screen. And I can't even imagine how that process works. How does that work? And how did you kind of figure out a way to gather all this information and put it on screen?
So we have a multifaceted approach here. Mm-hmm. One is by bringing the camera into the archives, sort of breaking through that wall so that people get to see what it's like to do the research. The second part is by talking to scholars and other people who are close to the stories. So we interviewed probably about, 25 people for this project. And people have written books, people mm-hmm. have studied women's history particularly, or something specific to the stories we're telling. We probably did, 25 hours or 30 or 40 hours of interviews with these people. Then we did research to understand what the worlds they lived in looked like, and we recreated important scenes from their lives. We went to several different historic sites around Philadelphia to do the filming, and places where there wasn't very much that was anachronistic, and we could present the interior or the exterior or the land in a way that was authentic to that time. Mm-hmm. So we reenacted and recreated these people's lives by hiring actors to play them, by hiring professional costume designers. We're pretty experienced doing this kind of recreation work. Our director, Andrew Ferret, we've directed dozens and dozens of these kinds of scenes, but there's something particular that you have to do. It has to be authentic, and you have to pay attention to details.
Yeah.
So that's what we did. We have those three things.
The 250th anniversary of the founding of America is approaching. Of course, we're celebrating it all year long. Talk about what it kind of means to tell these stories that people probably never heard before, presenting, a different historical view of women during 250. What does that mean, and what does that look like, and why is this important to do this right now?
One of our really big inspirations as dames is a woman named Dinah. And she was formerly enslaved by the Logan family. And she was manumitted before July 1776. And she was really sort of the entry point for me to think about adding her to our register of ancestors. Because what we were thinking about is, and we really put thought around, is gaining your freedom, is fighting oppression a service to the colony? Because that's something new. That's not signing a document. That's not working in a governmental office. And yes, of course that was a mm-hmm. service, because that's how it should have been in the first place. So Dinah is very special to Stenton, because after she was freed, she actually stayed there and lived there because her grandson was still enslaved there, and she stayed to raise him. Her daughter left, but he was not of the age to be manumitted. And there's a whole great history around Quakerism and Northern Quakers and slavery, which is still going on at Stenton. It's something we really believe in and talk about. And so by filming on site and filming, actually having this actress portraying Dinah, Well, there was two things. In our piece, we see Dinah as a young girl. And when we talk about Dinah, we always see her as a full-fledged adult in her autonomy once she was free. But we see her in this piece as a little girl and seeing her serving the Logan family. And it sort of blew my mind when I saw that because I wasn't used to that. But to film, like, we really were wrestling up some spirits. Like, the day it was rainy, it was horrible. And then, like, when we were filming a particular scene with Dinah, the sun came out. She was there. Mm. And Senton is a really important, special place. It's one of the, like I said it earlier, one of the most authentic places to experience history in Philadelphia. And Dinah is a really big part of that. And so hers is a story that is not typically America 250, right? It's not the Into the Breach patriot men, you know, the founding fathers. And so right now in this moment, this is when we need to hear these stories.
Yeah, I agree with that as well. And, you know, I'm thinking of young girls. You know, I'm thinking of the things that they're learning in school and how angry you are that you didn't hear any of these stories as well. It's pretty important for young women, for young girls, to understand that, you know, there were contributions made by women just as much as there were contributions made by men in the founding of the country. It kind of shapes how you look at things as you grow up in the future. Like, I understand the anger that you're having, because had we known that, we may have been looking at things a little bit different.
Yes.
Yeah.
And I just read something. There's somebody I follow on Instagram, and she's a very feminist forward woman. And she was sharing a lot of the comments in her, you know, the messages she gets. And there was some man saying that everything she had was because of a man, and we couldn't last a week, and, you know, without men. And I think about what we need to know what happened from the very beginning, because that's nonsense. We know it's nonsense. Yeah. We know women run the world in so many different ways, and we need to stop pretending that that's not the case. Mm-hmm. And these women illustrate that in really powerful ways.
Now, if these messages well received, I mean, just to hear you say that boldly with intention, I'm imagining that some people may not want to even hear that or even support that.
We've been really pleasantly surprised. So last night was our first big kickoff event. And we were, I had two events yesterday. I gave a presentation and then we had a nighttime event and everything was sold out. And I feel like we are scratching an itch right now. People are wanting bigger stories. They want to know more. They don't want to know about the same men that we've been hearing about. They want the founding generation.
Mm.
I was amazed at how many older white men came up to me after our event and were asking me questions. They were really curious. And, you know, I was actually channeling my 12-year-old self last night, and a couple of women came up to me and said that they were teary when I was talking about my 12-year-old self. And so, yeah, I think we're hitting a nerve.
And really, you know, this country, the revolution, the project of this country, and we feel this all particularly right now, it's never been finished, and it's always in doubt. And so we're always founding in this country. And our hope with this series was that women, particularly women, would see themselves in these stories and see the ways that they themselves are the center of networks, and they themselves are creating the worlds that they live in, just as these women were.
Mm-hmm. Okay. And I know you were talking about feedback. I wanted to hear a little bit more about the actual project, people who viewed the project. What's some of the feedback that you've heard from people?
Well, the launch event for the first premiere was last night, so we have a very small amount of information to share with you. But we had a full house at the Museum of the American Revolution, people who did not have any idea what they were about to see. We had released a trailer, but the trailer just is a suggestion of things. And here we were showed three episodes of the series. Mm-hmm. And I would say people were stunned to see women centered in the story, the personal lives of women and the way they navigated and the way they negotiated and the way they saw themselves through perhaps difficult times, challenging moments, the way they became the center of their own networks of people in this new country without any precedent or anyone to mentor them or help them along the way.
Right.
That, I think, grabbed people most strongly.
Yeah.
And that's what we were hoping for. But again, we want people to see themselves in these nine women.
They are very personal stories, and I think that's what's captivated people. A lot of history telling are the big, broad headlines, and these are the very specific details.
Yeah.
And I think that that is something people have noticed.
A pregnant woman who has complications in her pregnancy, but who is also herself a medical healer, and as she's learning to heal herself from the complications of her pregnancy, which she learned how to do it from someone else, she wrote all that down so that it could be then passed on to other people. She's like a doctor serving her own self, treating her own self, and showing it to the world mm-hmm. in the most intimate and vulnerable way possible.
It just shows the resilience of women. I mean, honestly, you just don't realize how far back it goes, but this is just what women do.
It's always been.
Yeah, it's yes. always been from the very beginning. So where can people go to see this docuseries? Where is it? Where can we go?
It's very local at the moment.
Okay.
There are a number of ways. Right now, we're taking a sort of curated approach. We call it a year of curated conversation, and we do have events, and we want to have these personal conversations. So every event is a little different. You'll see a different selection of these stories.
Okay.
We are doing, you know, we did Museum of the American Revolution last night. We're going to have something at the Historical Society of Pennsylvania. We're going to have something at Betsy Ross House, First Friday, the Working Women. We are going to be at Arch Street Meeting House to talk more about Quakers and slavery. And so go to our website. There is a calendar. Eventually, we do want to make sure that these are out in more accessible places. So that's something we're working on. The other thing is, because the PA Dames believe in education, if there is a school or if there is a historic site where one of these stories or a few of these stories really resonate, they can contact us. We will give them free use of these videos. So it's a process that we're still building a little bit here, but we're just trying to get the stories out.
Okay. All right. And where can we go to get more information on PA Dames?
Our website is nscdapa.org.
Well, I have to say thank you for bringing this forth. I think this is wonderful that this is something that people could look to and learn more about women who help shape the nation. Mickey Herr and Nathaniel Popkin, thank you so much for joining us on Bridging Philly.
Thank you,
Rico. So much.
Bridging Philly continues in a moment. Back to Bridging Philly from KYW News Radio 103.9 FM.
It's one of the city's hidden gems, Benjamin Franklin's Library. As the nation celebrates the 250th anniversary of the signing of the Declaration of Independence, Sharad A. Howard gets a look at some of the more rare historical documents and artifacts in American history. Let's dive in on the latest Sharad in the City.
You've arrived at your destination.
This week on Sharad in the City, we're at the corner of 5th and Chestnut Streets. We open it up for America's 250th, the anniversary of the signing of the Declaration of Independence in 1776, just a couple of blocks away. And I'm heading to Benjamin Franklin's Philosophical Society Library to visit my friend Dave, a keeper of secrets, if you will. Now, this library was a labor of love for Franklin, who played such a large part in America's history. This building holds the largest collection of the most rare copies of the Declaration of Independence, even the original journals of Lewis and Clark, and really just so much more. And David's going to give us a tour and share with us American history that very few people have ever seen. This is truly a rare opportunity. Now let's go. All right, so going around the corner, so it's really easy to get lost here, but you don't want to go to the front. You want to go to the back where it says Library Entrance. Now David should be right inside the doors. He said he's going to meet us here.
Hello. How are you?
Hey, David. Hi. How are you? Introduce yourself.
Sure. My name is David Gary. I'm the Associate Director of Collections at the APS Library and Museum here in Old City. So I manage the archival materials and the printed material collections for the library. We have 3.5 miles of archival material, a huge collection, all in the areas of the history of science, history of early America, and the history of Native Americans, with a special emphasis on linguistics and their languages.
Amazing. So you know what? You're going to have to take me for a drive.
Yeah.
Let's do this.
Let's go walk around. Yeah. So we have a wonderful museum as well. Our museum has about 3,000 objects in it. We're going to go see one of those objects first. It's actually in our reading room. The reading room is where our researchers are able to look at our rare manuscripts and books. All are welcome. Just all you got to do is fill out our forms and follow our rules, and you are welcome to come in.
Okay, so how old is this building?
The building here, it's made to look old, but it was finished in 1959. So the APS was given the land underneath, and then we were told, well, you have to build your own library. So we did that in the 50s when the whole park was redone. So
B-O-Y-L.
Exactly.
All right. So where are we heading now?
We're heading over here into the reading room to look at a chair, which I think you will find very interesting.
A chair? Yeah. Where?
So you're looking at a really amazing chair. Benjamin Franklin was one of our founders in 1743, so we're a 283-year-old institution. He gave us, well, we acquired his papers mostly in 1840, but more later. One of the things he gave us at his death in his will was his library chair, which we are looking at right now.
It's amazing. What is that mahogany? It says mahogany,
yes,
leather,
yes,
and steel rod.
Yeah. Well, if you look at the picture down there, you can see, like, you know, Franklin being Franklin, he was able to, you know, reconfigure this to have a step stool built into it, so you can actually get books higher on higher shelves.
Would expect nothing less from old Ben.
So it's really amazing. And this was a chair that our APS presidents sat in for a very long time.
Oh,
so,
wow.
Yeah, so it has like a longer history than just Franklin.
Love it. It's gorgeous. Yeah. All right, where to next? Yeah. This place is huge.
Yeah, it's really big.
Okay, all these little secret doors.
Yeah, altogether, it's roughly 5 miles of shelving and 2 basement levels here.
Get out. So who needs a gym when you've got the library?
I do a lot of walking around.
Yeah, you do. And this looks like a vault.
Is this a vault? This is our manuscript vault. So these are all materials that are from the 18th century stored here, with some other exceptions. We have really great collections in here. If you look behind you over here, these are the Benjamin Franklin papers. This is about 70% of the known Ben Franklin papers.
The Benjamin Franklin papers. Oh, my gosh. You can
right
almost
here.
Smell them in the room, and it's a little cigar.
Yeah, it's amazing. So we have all sorts of things in this space. The other thing that your listeners might like to know is we have the Lewis and Clark journals. We have 18 leather-bound volumes and then 12 fragments. So altogether, there are 30 items in that collection for us. And then we have lots of other Lewis and Clark-related material, which is also just amazing.
So you can come here and have your own Lewis and Clark adventure.
Yes. The Lewis and Clark journals are one of the items that we are pretty reluctant to bring out, but we do bring it out sometimes for exhibitions and things like that. So
very cool. Mm-hmm. All right, so what next?
Yeah, we're gonna go to our rare book vault, which is at the top of the building.
Of course, the top.
We're gonna take a special elevator up there. So you'll see, the building was built in the 50s. We still have that sort of 50 style elevator.
Does it get any cooler than that?
And there'll be a folding gate, real old fashioned. I'll be your doorman for today. So,
yeah. Alex up. Do I close this or close it?
Yeah, don't close by itself.
Okay, cool.
All right, so we're going to go to the top of the building. All sorts of security to get there. So this is really behind the scenes.
Yeah, you talk about hidden treasures.
So I think I said we have about 325,000 books here. I'd say in the space we're going to has about 10,000, and these are our rarest, most valuable material that needs special care.
Gosh, the doors get heavier.
Yeah.
This clothes is so cool, guys. It's like we're going to the center of the earth.
Yeah. So we have wonderful, wonderful collections up here. So we put anything that was printed before 1750 into this space, and then anything after that's curator's choice. Just one collection I would point out, I think one of our greatest printed materials collections here at APS is our Thomas Paine collection. We have the largest collection of Thomas Paine printed material in the world. Completest collection, that's how I would put it. So the person who gave it to us was Richard Gimbel of Gimbel Department Store fame, New York and Philadelphia.
Gimbel's? Oh, that is so Philly.
Yeah.
So Philly.
Yeah, exactly. So Gimbel donated this collection to us in the 1970s, and he collected for decades and tried to get everything, every printing, every translation, every different edition. And he would have, so we just have huge amounts of Paine material. So if you want to study the sort of public dissemination of these, of the works of Paine, which many people do, he's a sort of, you know, the demigod of democracy, you come here to do that kind of work. So you can sort of just trace it throughout time.
So what's next?
And then we have a really huge collection of scientific material, especially natural history.
Yes.
So I'm going to show you my favorite book in the entire society. I'll
yes.
bring it over here. So come on.
And you know, if it's David's favorite, it must be pretty cool. He's a cool guy.
It is a very large book, so we're in a section here where we have oversized books. Here's
a nice... You know it's old when it's the size of your torso.
Exactly. It's huge. This book goes back really far.
It's like a book of spells. Don't be creepy.
It is a little creepy. Wait till you see. A beautiful book.
It's colorful.
It's
blues, colorful. Yellows, greens, and the foreword.
So this is a book on the natural history of toads and frogs. It's the first time that a naturalist had traced the full life cycle of frogs and toads and made very beautiful engravings of them.
And it's so well illustrated. They've individually illustrated each page by hand.
Well, they certainly did do that. In this period, you would draw it first, and then someone would engrave it on a copper plate, most likely. That person had to do it backwards from the drawing, so when you printed it out, it would have to then come out. That would then come out the positive way. And then after it was printed, you would then have to hand color it. So in this instance, there was some sort of like a assembly line.
Yeah.
You would put the print, one person would have a section of it to manage, and you would constantly do that same section over so it was perfect.
Such it's talent and a labor of love, really.
Well, books take immense labor in this period. So this is a book by Augustus Johannes Rossell von Rosenhoff. Von Rosenhoff was from Nuremberg. He was ill in the late 1750s, and he was stuck in a castle, from what I read. And he would...
Rapunzel.
Yeah, kind of. Instead of being trapped, though, he actually went around and looked at frogs for a couple years and then wrote this really amazing book.
Making good use of his time.
Yeah, exactly. What I love about this book, just from as I'm a print historian, I love seeing different types of print. And here you can see at the top we have the italic print, and then down here you have the German Fraktur. So you have these two different styles of printing on the page.
Right, all the fonts. It's so different, complete, different worlds.
And so you go into the text of the book, and you got two columns, one in the italic and one in the Fraktur. But let me just show you here. This is amazing. So there's hand-colored pictures throughout.
It's gorgeous.
Yeah, so what I like about our copy is that on the left side here, you are able to see an uncolored print. This is what it would have looked like when it came off the plate right away. And then on the right side here, just opposite, you're able to see that how the color makes a difference. This would have been a hand-colored item, probably by women. And what would have been a woman's job in a lot of cases.
Is the coloring. Okay, gorgeous. And you can see it's an action shot.
Yeah, exactly.
they're jumping, they're hanging out, uh-huh, they're having the brunch.
Yeah, and they're really rich and very beautiful. So it's just, I don't know, it's unexpected. That's why I like the book so much.
Oh, it's beautiful. Yeah. A lot of little surprises.
Yeah, exactly. And it came to us in the 1830s from one of our APS members, so it has this really cool provenance and story. Real treasures all around, yeah.
Yeah, and people don't get that Philadelphia is really a quiet mecca of rare books.
I've always been able to find any book I've wanted to look at in Philadelphia. It's unbelievable. It's a great mecca here.
So talk about talents and trends. Mm-hmm. That's what we do here too.
Yeah, the libraries here are wonderful.
So if people want to come to the library and get a sneak peek, get a one-on-one, how do they do it?
Yeah, come to the library. We'd love to see you there. We have an exhibit in our lobby. We're at 105 South 5th Street at the corner of Library Street and 5th Street.
And the coolest thing right now, what's on exhibit?
It's called These Truths, the Declarations of Independence. So we're focusing on the many different copies that were made over the first 50 years.
Like, guys, come on. You got to check it out. Let's go.
Thank you for joining us. Bridging Philly is brought to you by Gift of Life Donor Program. Register as an organ donor at donorsone.org. For more information on Bridging Philly, follow KYW News Radio on social media. And if you have any ideas for interesting features that you'd like to share, feel free to get in touch with us at bridgingphilly@kywnewsradio.com. For Sharaday Howard and our producer Sabrina Boyd-Circa, I'm Raquel Williams. Be well.